Welcome to Atticus After Dark, a weekly podcast presentation produced by Atticus Books and hosted by the writer, editor, and lover of cheese balls, Sam Slaughter. Atticus After Dark is fiercely dedicated to independent literature, bookish culture, and wildly creative arts. Guests include anyone with a modicum of success and an insatiable appetite for reading, writing, and embracing a life of letters, words, and imagination. Now, here's Sam Slaughter.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Atticus After Dark, the official podcast of Atticus Books. My name is Sam Slaughter, and I am your host, and today we've got another great guest, Sarah Lipman. Sarah Lipman is the author of the story collections Doll Palace, re-released by 713 Books, and Jerks from Mason Jar Press. Her work has also been honored by the New York Foundation for the Arts and has appeared in the Millions, The Washington Post, The Lit Hub, Best Small Fictions, Catapult, Guernica, Epiphany, Split Lip, Joyland Wigleaf, and elsewhere. She received a BA from Brown and an MFA from the New School, and has been teaching creative writing for over 20 years to people of all ages. Currently, she teaches with Jericho Writers. For many years, she co-hosted The Sunday Salon, a long-standing New York City reading series founded by Nita Novino. Raised outside of Philly, she lives with her husband and children in Brooklyn. Her debut novel, Lech, is out now from Tortoise Books. Sarah, how's it going?
It's going well. That was a lengthy introduction. Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Thank you for coming on. We've got a lot to talk about. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about Lech. So Lech is your first novel, which came out very recently, or fairly recently. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Sure. So Lech centers around the potential sale of a large swath of property in the Catskills, specifically in Sullivan County, over the summer of 2014. And the repercussions of that potential sale in the lives of five different people, which is also rather thin, thin wrapping for its deeper thematic imperative, which is from the Book of Genesis, which is Lech Lecha, which asks the question, how to go forth, how to build your life, freeing yourself from, or at least learning how to navigate or shoulder some of the many things that we carry. So it's sort of a deep dive into that exploration.
And one of my favorite things about the book, the place itself is so fully realized, like around the characters, whether it's Ira or anyone else, Noreen or anyone else. How was it intentional to make it almost like another character, or was it simply just this is the setting?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I really started to my initial seedling for the setting was actually not Sullivan County. I don't know how familiar this might be, like two in the weeds for you, but my initial idea for the setting was not necessarily Sullivan County. It was Wayne, Sullivan County, New York, Catskills region, upstate New York, but rather on the other side of the river in the Poconos, Wayne County, Pennsylvania, which is where I spent a lot of time as a kid going to summer camps and stuff. So a lot of my initial observations about class and cultural conflicts were really based in Wayne County. But then I realized that Sullivan County, as being sort of the hotbed of the former Borscht Belt, had that built-in metaphor of sort of decay, and also just a very deep metaphor for sort of our current moment in the country. So I knew I wanted to shift it over to the Borscht Belt, to Sullivan County, but I was really sort of trepidatious to do so because I hadn't spent so much time there. So I wound up doing a lot of research in that region. And then over time, did I realize that the place itself, as you said in your question, kind of took on its own sort of character presence. And so hence sort of the framing of the prologue, which is meant to be sort of the setting as character.
And one of the other themes that sort of pops up throughout, and you mentioned the book of Genesis, but religion itself seems to pop up fairly often, and Judaism in particular. When you're putting that into a story, how important is it for you for that to be one of the central themes as you can sort of pull it out from here?
This is what I've been saying. I consider this to be sort of my most confrontationally Jewish book. I would argue that there is sort of a Jewish sensibility to my syntax, perhaps, or my sentence structure, and sort of rhythmically and thematically, in the sense of my sentences tending to look in the past and in the future at the same time, the sort of that joint sort of melancholy longing and anxiety. But yes, certainly like thematically head on confrontationally Jewish story. I think even, not all the characters obviously in this, in the five different points of view are even Jewish. So it's I think the question of, how to go forth, how to build your life is a universal question that's transcending all religions. And it's certainly, and one that we're all sort of grappling with and needing to do that sort of internal reckoning in order to have that external movement. But also this larger question of faith and belief, I think, is one that unifies all the characters here as well. So, yeah, I mean, it was conscious. Like I knew that I wanted to write a more quote unquote Jewish story, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. And from that syntax and sentence structure angle level, whatever you want to call it, how conscious were you of that flow and the sounds and how it would be put on page?
I think that's kind of just how I write. I do consider myself a short story writer primarily, or at least like sort of most naturally. And so I would say that's just something that, it's not conscious because, in the way that our voices emerge sort of organically or intrinsically from the stuff that makes us, I think but only now sort of in an academic fashion can I identify that there is that sort of pull in both directions. But right. I think that happens just while I'm writing.
And one of the other things about all of the voice, the five different points of view, the voices in the book, the comedic timing that comes out over and over again is just so spot on. And what I loved about that, the setting and the area is just very oppressive, but you still manage to make it funny. How, when you're writing a short story or a novel or anything like that, when does the fine tuning of those jokes come into play? Like, are you throwing just whatever hits the wall the first time and then going from there? Or do you have them sort of preconceived and you're just waiting to use them somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because nobody in my family thinks I'm funny. So like it's not a real, it's not like a deliberate, it's like, not like I'm going for like, but I'm bump, that's not how I operate in the world. I think that there's, I was just talking about this with some other writers, but sort of like the flip side of tragedy or of like trauma, misery loves comedy. And so there's sort of that twinning, that pairing that happens, because otherwise, as you said, there is, what did you say? It's like oppressive, and so there can be so much darkness. But some of that levity needs to balance out the darkness. And so, no, I don't know that it was, I think there's a real danger, obviously. And we see this with, again, just to contextualize for listeners, but Ira, one of the primary characters, he's a would-be comedian. He never made it. And so in of itself sort of a tragic, makes him sort of a tragic figure, but like his, he's the only one who's perhaps deliberately going for jokes in a way that's often not landing well and sort of missing. And so, that was definitely something that I had to be mindful of like, I was definitely trying to trying to put in some stinkers, right? Mm-hmm. But like, how much can the reader, you know, is the reader understanding to wink at the stinker, you know, like the sort of the gradations again of point of view, right? When Ivor might think that he's lobbing a joke, but we all know that it's, you know, it's missing the mark, right? So, but generally speaking, I think it's tricky and dangerous to try to, go for that punchline, you know, like a real punchline that's going to hit, because it's always going to fail. I mean, at least in my experience, like if you're trying to be funny, you're probably not, right? And so, which again is part of Ira's problems.
Well, Sarah, this has been great. We do have to take a quick break, but I've got more questions on the other side for you, if you're cool with that.
Sounds great.
Awesome.
Thank you.
We will be right back with more Atticus After Dark.
Visit the Atticus Books website for a dazzling array of creative works by independent authors deserving wider recognition. Atticus Books, dedicated to discovering new writers and redefining the role of literature one distinct voice at a time. To learn more, visit our website, atticusbooks.net.
And we are back here at Atticus After Dark with Sarah Lipman. Sarah, hello again.
Hello.
So one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about, and sort of the reason that we wanted to have you on, is you are judging the Atticus Reviews Flash Fiction Contest this year.
I am. I'm very excited to do that.
When it comes to contest, are you a contest enterer yourself?
Not really. Not
That's
really.
Fair.
I haven't done a contest in a long time, but I have. I mean, certainly I have in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think what I like particularly about the way this contest is being run is that we are reading the submissions anonymously. And so that's something that I'm really excited to experience with all of you.
And when it comes to... actually we'll back up for someone who maybe hasn't entered a contest before, who is listening to this, what are some general maybe tips or tricks that you've learned over the years in the whole contest life, if you want to call it that?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think that, you know, it's funny. I mean, the analogy right now, and again, forgive me if I sound remotely distracted, because my son is, you know, waiting to hear on colleges. And so I think like this whole idea of trying to like game the system or like figure out what someone is looking for, you know, like that's sort of the false way to go about it. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to just own your shit, own your voice, own the story that you feel compelled to tell. And if it is a story that you feel compelled to tell, that there's going to be sort of that built-in urgency and vitality. And then that is going to transmit, you know, through the language, the words on the page, and, you know, into the hearts of the reader. So I think really, I know this is sort of the cliche that's bandied about of like, send us our best work, as if you're gonna, you know, send them your, you know, when you phone it in. But at the same time, I would argue again, like on this theme of sort of looking inward, the deep reckoning, like we have our bullshit meter, and like we know what the difference between a well-crafted but perhaps sanitized story that's not necessarily has that urgent pulse versus one that has a different sense of immediacy. And so I think, like, again, contests are great, fine, sure, but really what needs to be done before one submits to the contest is sort of communing with the self and with the work on the page and asking yourself, you know, like what is the story doing, you know, how is it twisting, you know, how is it, you know, not to say that it has to be like a twisty story, but, you know, how is it changing the temperature of the reader, and how does it, you know, how does it shift over time?
I really wish when I was in college that someone would have told me the own your shit, because that I think would have set me on a much different path, because definitely was trying, you know, the other way a lot and never worked. So owning my ship probably would have been a
all
better
we have is our like right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll be reading a lot of flash fiction. What are you currently reading? Not really in an off time as a writer or sort of work, but what are you reading right now?
Oh, I love these questions. Okay. Forgive me. I'm going to turn around. I just read and really loved Lydia Millett's novel, Dinosaurs. I love Lydia Millett. I think she's just so smart and wonderful. I am reading, actually, for review, I'm going to be reading Robert Lopez's, first book of nonfiction, Dispatches from Puerto Nowhere. I don't know if listeners are familiar with Robert Lopez. He's actually one of, you know, share who some of the grand poobahs of flash fiction of the short form are. Robert is really up there. I just read Deborah Shapiro's Consolation. It's a really lovely short novel that is sort of reminiscent of Michael Cunningham's The Hours, that I just really loved. Really quiet book, and interestingly, self-published book. She has two books that were traditionally published with big houses, and then this one, because it's sort of quiet and doesn't necessarily, you know, dial the stakes in sort of the conventional, you know, industry, you know, terms, she took it on her own, and it's really, really stunning. And what else am I? Oh, I'm going to be reading Ann Yoder's new novel, The Enhancers. I'm really excited about that. I'm going to take that on, winter break, as well. And I have to give a shout out always to, Peter Orner, who's another person whose short fiction, I think, is, exemplary of sort of the kind of, stuff that really speaks to me and that I'm looking for. But that was his second memoir, Still No Word From You, which I read already once, but I'm going to be rereading it because it's so nourishing.
Nothing wrong with rereading a good book. So I think this might be our last episode of 2022. Do you have any writerly resolutions for the next year? Or resolutions in general?
Yeah, you know, I was just talking to a friend of mine, actually a wonderful writer named Julianis. We were just on the phone a little bit ago, and we were talking about not in the same language, not in the terms of, you know, resolutions, but just sort of in thinking about what we want for our work moving forward. And I mean, it's been sort of, it's been sort of a slutty year for me, Sam. I had two books in one year, so it was a lot of sort of promotion and publicity and all that sort of squirmy, uncomfortable stuff that might come naturally to some writers and certainly does not come naturally to me, and takes a lot out of me emotionally. So to be honest, I'm really happy to not have anything coming out. And I'm really looking forward to some real quiet, some internal quiet, and to get back to the page in sort of a deep and focused way.
And are you working on anything right now?
Yeah, I'm working on a novel that is actually set in my hometown of Philadelphia. I'm about two-thirds through the first draft.
Very cool. Are you still writing short stories? Question mark. No, nothing else.
I think I will always be writing short stories. My novel took me such a long time that I had to cheat on the novel with a book of short stories, because there's something about the story form, at least for me, that is so energizing and kind of gives me that jolt. And so I'm sure I will always be writing short stories. I have two short stories, two ideas for stories. One is a flash and one is a much longer, more traditional story, that they're both in the head at the moment, but I'm trying to resist that impulse and stay with this novel project. It's my tendency to kind of run away when things get tough in the murky middle. So I'm trying to resist that impulse right now and just stay with it.
I believe in you.
Thank you. How about you, Sam? What are you working on?
Hopefully a cocktail book. Okay. I guess a second one. Okay. But we shall see. It's been a rough year for me. So trying for 2023, just trying to get back on the horse. That'll be the biggest obstacle, I think, is rededicating. But we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say to that end, I mean, I am someone who believes deeply in fallow periods and, you know, not to wax Pollyanna over tough moments and tough years. I've certainly had so many, but I also really believe that so much is happening away from the page when we're not on that page, and we can be our own worst enemy in terms of beating ourselves up when we fall off the horse, so to speak. But I think those periods are also really necessary. They give us something else, so that when we get back to it, there's, you know, we discover something else there. Anyway, that's my that's my pet talk of the day. But do you have a favorite cocktail for 2023? What should I be drinking?
Oh man, let's see. That's tough. I'm doing an event tonight, actually, and we're doing a hot toddy with ginger and turmeric and tequila. So that'll be warming me up this winter, and then from there, wherever my space cadet mind takes me.
I love it. I love it.
Sarah, this has been amazing. Where can people find you?
Well, I dick around on the internet far too much. So if you find me on Twitter or Instagram, feel free to tell me to get off. That's where I like to procrastinate. And I also have a website, sarahlipman.com.
Awesome. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on Atticus After Dark.
Thanks so much, Sam. I appreciate it.
For everyone out there, if you're listening, please give us a like, a review, a comment, share it, download it, do all of the things with it. Also, check us out on atticusreview.org and atticusbooks.net. If you go to Atticus Review's website, you can see all of the instructions and guidelines for the flash fiction contest. So if you're a flash fictioneer out there, go check it out, and Sarah might be reading your work. Otherwise, we'll see you again next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Atticus After Dark with your host, Sam Slaughter, a presentation of Atticus Books. To learn more, visit our website, atticusbooks.net.